Okay, we're beginning here on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph by the two dots. Here we have the Gemara quoting the Mishnah of Safek Ben Teisha LeRishon, Safek Ben Shevel LeAcharon. We're not sure if he's 9 months from the first or 7 months from the second. Samalei Rov of the Rov Nachman, Lema Halech Acharov Nashim. Why don't we go after the majority of women? Verov Nashim LeTisha Yodan. And most women go to full term, have 9 month babies. So if we follow the rove over here, we can assume that the baby belongs to the first husband. Amalei nishedidan nishiva yaldan. Our women give birth in 7 months, so that undermines the rove. Amalei nishedidchu avaruba da'alma. Okay, so the women by you are giving birth at 7 months, but why does that ruin the rove? The rove goes by what is considered the world statistic about when women are going to give birth. It's not about a particular area. Amalei achi kamina. Rov Nashim Yaldan Letisha. Majority of women do give birth at 9 months. Umiut Lishiva. That's number one. So the majority is 9 months. The minority are at the 7th month along. Again, the Gemara is based on the fact that they believe that the only two viable babies were babies that went to full term, 9 months, and babies that went 7 months. By the 7 months, the Gemara believe can even be Mikutaim, which means anywhere from 6 months up to the end of that 7th month, an 8th month, the Chazal believed the baby would not survive. So here you have these two time periods. So the majority are in the 9 month full term, and there's a minority that come out in the 7 months. B'chol yoledet l'tisha, when people give birth at a full term, meaning 9 months, ubra nikar l'shlish yameha, then it's noticeable, her pregnancy is noticeable when you hit the third of the way through, whether that's 90 days or a little bit different off of the 90 days, it's not clear. But Zo Hoil Velohukar Ubra the Shlishyameha. This woman at the third way point, we didn't have any sense that she was pregnant. It wasn't obvious that she was pregnant. Ichrale Ruba. Therefore she loses the rove, because the rove is intertwined with these two facts. Majority of women are giving birth at 9 months, and women who are giving birth at 9 months show at the 3 month point or the third way point. So this woman didn't show, and now she's ruined that rove of 9 months because you've undermined it. So now you have the miut of 7, plus you've kind of knocked out the 9 months because she wasn't visible. So he kol ha'yolodot l'tish'a ubranikar l'shlish yameha. Wait, if everybody who gives birth at 9 months at the third way point, she is visible or she's showing a pregnancy, ha'amad lo hukar l'shlish yameha ubra vaday bar shiva l'bajrahu. Then already you could establish it's clear that she's a 7th month pregnancy and it belongs to the latter. Ella, you have to amend it and say this. The majority of women who are going to go to full term, their baby or their pregnancy already shows by a third of the way through. This woman, since she didn't show at the third of the way through, she loses out on the rove. So again, the rove is intertwined with these two things, which is the majority of women go to full term. Majority of women show after a third of the way through. And those two majorities are connected. So if I lose the majority because this woman didn't show at the third of the way through, then we can't rely on the other majority, which is that she's going to go to full term. So now I have equal play between the chances that she's a 7th month and a 9 month, because having a baby at 7 months is a miut. Not showing at the 3rd month and having a full-term baby, that's also a miut. So now I have 2 miutim that are vying for what is the outcome over here. And that's why we have a safek over here, because we've eliminated the majority. And by eliminating the majority, now we're left with 2 minority possibilities, and both equal minority possibilities over here. Tan Rabbanan, Rishon Ra'ui Liot Kohen Gadol, V'sheni Mamzer Misafek. The first child that is born can be a Kohen Gadol, because the first child that is born, Mimonov Shach, is not a problem, because either he was born to the original brother and he's a fine child, or he was born to the Yabam, he's also a fine child, because the first child that was born, if he belonged to the original brother, then he was born from that marriage, which was a fine marriage. If he's born from the second brother, the one who performed Yibum, then also it's a fine marriage, because that means the first brother did not have children. And then the brother performs Yibum, did it rightfully so, and the baby that's born is a kosher baby. So the first baby that's born here, whether it belonged to the original brother or to the Yabam, that baby is a kasher baby, without any questions. It's Ra'ui Liot Kohen Gadol. Tosafot points out over here that's not perfectly clear because the Gemara talks in other places that you have to be Yaches. You have to know who your Yichus is. Over here, this person cannot identify his father because he has a safek about his father, even though we know that he is a kasher. So he says that's an imposition. The Rabbanan, Midoraita, he would be totally fine to be the Kohen Gadol. So now, the Sheni, the second one, is a Mamzer Misafek. Because there's a question here, did they need to perform Yibum or not? Because if the first baby belonged to the original brother, then the Yibum was unnecessary. And the Yibum was unnecessary, they're violating Eshet Ach, and the second baby that's born is a Mamzer. On the other hand, if the first baby belonged to the Yabam and the Yivama, then the second baby is kasher, because they were supposed to form Yibum in that instance. So now Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov Omer, Ein Mamzer Misafek. There is no such thing as a Mamzer Misafek. Today I have two statements. You have the Tanakhama statement, which is Mamzer Misafek, and Rabbi Lezer rejecting that. The question is, what are they arguing about? Maik Amar, Amar Abayi, Hachik Amar, Rishon, Rayu Liot Kohen Gadol, V'sheni Safek Mamzer, V'asurma Mamzeret. The first one can be a Kohen Gadol. The second one is a Safek Mamzer, and therefore he can't marry a Mamzeret Vadayit, because we're not certain he's a Mamzer. So if he goes and marries a Mamzeret Vadayit, that could be an Easter for him, a violation deoraita. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Eino Safek Mamzer, Elavadei Mamzer. He's not a Safek Mamzer, he's a real Mamzer. Umutar ben Mamzeret, then he can marry a Mamzeret. So Baye claims that's the machloket over here. What is the categorization of this individual? Tanakhama says he's a Safek Mamzer. That means that he's really stuck. He can't marry a Yisraelite because he might be a Mamzer. He can't marry a Mamzeret because he might be a Kosher. And so now he's stuck. Rabbi Lezer says, no, he's a Mamzer Vada and he can marry a Mamzeret. Rabbi Amar, Hochi Kamar. Rabbi disagrees with the Baye's explanation of that Braita, and he suggests that this is the explanation. Hochi Kamar, Rishon Roi Liot Kohen Gadol. First one, again, Miman of Shach can be a Kohen Gadol. Vashini, Mamzer Vadai Misafek. He's a full-fledged Mamzer Misafek. Umutar b'mamzeret. And the Tanakhama says he is mutar b'mamzeret. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Ein Vadai Mamzer Misafek. There's no such thing as a real Mamzer Misafek. Elo Safek Mamzer. He's a Safek Mamzer. V'asur b'mamzeret. And therefore he's asur b'mamzeret. And he can't marry a Mamzeret. And they're arguing with this opinion of Rabbi Elazar. It's not Rabbi Elazar Omer. Vada'an bivada'an mutar. If you have a vadei mamzer and a vadei mamzeret, or vice versa, they're mutarim to get married. Vada'an bisfekan, usfekan bivada'an. If you have a vadei mamzer and a safek mamzeret, or vice versa. A safek mamzeret and a vadei mamzer. Usfekan bisfekan, or a safek mamzer and safek mamzeret. Asurin. They are not allowed to get married because of the chances that they're not a mamzer. If they're not a mamzer, then there's a problem over here. Ve'elu hein sfeikan. And what is a safek over here? Shtuki, asufi, vikuti. So these are three different categories. Shtuki, as Rashi points out, the Gemara in Kiddushin says, shtuki is when he's korea aviv v'imo mishatko. When he asks for his father and his mother, they silence him. Shtuki is someone who we know the mother, but we do not know who the father is of this baby. That's a shtuki. Asufi is a baby that was abandoned, that we picked up in the shuk, an orphan that was picked up from the shuk, that we don't know anything about the lineage. And a kuti are the kutim, as we know them, the shomronim. The problem of mamzerut over there, Rashi points out, is that they're ain makpid al kedushe kesef vishtar. Since that's not explicit in the Torah, they think the only type of kiddushin is derech bi'ah. Kedushe Kesev and Kedushe Shtar, they think are an invention, their abonon, and therefore they do not subscribe to it. The late Gzereshova, the Kicha Kicha, they don't have that Gzereshova that we learn out from Ephron, this week's Parsha, that Kicha, the purchase of the property by Abraham, similarly the word the Kicha is used by Kiddushin, so therefore money can be used as part of the process of a Kiddushin, and Shtar as well, that we learn out in the Gemara in the beginning of Kiddushin, they don't subscribe to that. So therefore, if someone marries them with this methodology, they don't think it's a real marriage. And then someone else will marry them. So they end up with mamzerim because they don't recognize a marriage that we think is a marriage d'oraita, but they think has no power. So all of these have problems in terms of safek, because there is a chance they are a mamzer, but there's also a chance they are a kasher. So the way that Rabbi Lazar states it is, only vadai b'vadai is mutar, And that will be the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Versus the Tanakamo seems to allow that a Safek can get together with a Vadai. So, V'amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Halocha to Rabbi Elazar. The Halocha is like Rabbi Elazar. So that's Rav's position. Rav's position is that the Halocha is like Rabbi Elazar, which is you can't have Sveikot mixing, you can only have Vadai and Vadait that come together. And therefore, the Machlok between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim is on this issue. Is Rabbi Elazar right or is Rabbi Elazar wrong? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says Rabbi Elazar is right, and that's the way Rav paskins. Rav's paskining like Rabbi Elazar, and therefore, within the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, you have that sense that he says, no getting married unless you are Vadai and Vadai. If there's a Safek, you're no getting married. Tanakama, on the other hand, argues on Rabbi Elazar. Whereas, Kamrita Kamei Shmuel, Amarli, Hillel Shana. Says, wait a minute. When I went to Shmuel, this is Rabbi Yehuda, it's the Talmud of Rav and Shmuel. So when he's by Rav, Rav says, Allah is like Rabbi Elazar. Comes to Shmuel and he says, wait a minute. The Gemara in Kiddushin, Hillel Shana, Asara Yuchsin Alumi Babel. There were 10 different categories of individuals who came up from Babel. Kohanei, Leviyei, V'Yisraelei. We have Kohanim, Leviim, and Yisraelim. Chalalei, Gerei, Charurei, Mamzerei, Nitinei, Shtukei, Vasufei. Kulam Mutarim, Labo Zebzeh. They all can get married. So you have Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim. Chalalim are Kohanim who are born out of a problematic marriage for a Kohen. Gerei are converts. Charurei are l'shachrer, means that it's a shivcha kananit or an eved kananit that was freed. Mamzerei are mamzerim. Nitinei are those from Nitinim, the Givonim that converted in the time of Yoshua bin Nun. But Yoshua made them into quasi-avadim. So they have this status of not being full-fledged part of the Kahal. Shtukei, which we just read about, a person who does not know their father. And Asufei doesn't know either parents. Asufei is brought in from the Shuk. Kulam mutarim lavo zebezen. They're all mutar to marry into each other. That's not totally true, because within certain categories here, that is true. For instance, Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim can go together. Leviim, Yisraelim, Chalalei, Gerei, Becharurei, all can marry into each other because they don't have the problem. Kohen has a problem with problems of Zonah, problems of Gerim. But as far as Yisraelim and Leviim, they can marry everything in the list up to Charurei. And then the last grouping is Gerei, Charurei, Mamzerei, Nitinei, Shtukei, Vesufei can all marry into each other because, as Rashi points out here, the Kal Gerim, Lo Yikrei Kal, that the Gerim are not considered to be a Kahal or part of the Kahal in general. And therefore, they can marry a mamzer, because the mamzer, the restriction is lo yavo b'kal ha-shem. So only if you're classified as kahal are you restricted. Over there, the gerim are not classified as a kahal, and so therefore they can marry into the mamzerim. So those are the three different sections of that statement where they can have marriage between each other. But you do see over there that there is the allowance for marriage between a safek and a vadai, because the shtuke and the asufe are sfeikot, and they're categorized with the same grouping as mamzeret. And so you see here, we're allowing a vadai mamzer to marry into a sufek mamzer. So it says, if you have that from Hillel, v'ata mart halocha ki Rabbi Elazar, how could you possibly say the halocha is like Rabbi Elazar? So now the Gemara explains how this correlates with the machloket before between Abaye and Rava, and the machloket here between Rav and Shmuel. Abaye sabar la ki Shmuel, damar halocha ki Hillel. Abaye holds like Shmuel, who says halocha is like Hillel, mean against Rabbi Elazar's position. Therefore, he's mukila Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov aliba de hilchata. Therefore, he makes Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov follow the halachic position. So there will be no stira between our two principles of psak. Our one principle of psak over here is that the halacha is like Hillel versus Rabbi Elazar. That's number one. Number two is the halacha is always like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Kimishnato kavinaki, because his Mishnah is clean and very precise, and therefore we believe the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So now, in order to set up Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov aliba de hilchata, Abaye set up the braita that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is one of the opinion that says a safek can marry a vadai, is allowed to marry a vadai, because that's the way Shmuel says the halacha is. The halacha is like Hillel, who says that a safek mamzer can marry a vadai mamzer. So in order to reconcile those two halachot, Abaye explains the braita that the Tanakhama says no intermarrying between a safek mamzer and a vadai mamzer. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, no, no problem. Safek mamzer, vadai mamzer, they can intermingle, they can marry. And that's proven by the halacha, fact that halacha is like Hillel. So in that way, you uphold both halachot by establishing Reb Elazar ben Yaakov that way, and forcing the halacha to be like Hillel versus Rabbi Elazar. Rabba Savalaki Rav. On the other hand, Rabba follows the position of Rab, the Amar halacha ki Rabbi Elazar. The halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, which means that you cannot have a Suffolk Mamzer marry a Vaday Mamzer. Mukila Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Aliba de Hilchata. And therefore, he establishes Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion to follow that part, which is Kechetolo Tiksha Hilchata Hilchata. So therefore, you don't have a stira in halachot. That way, with regards to the psak of Rabbi Elazar versus Hillel, Rav says halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, which means you cannot have a suffolk mamzer marry a vaday mamzer. As far as the halacha that is found in the Braita, he establishes that the Tanakhama says that a vaday can marry a suffolk mamzer. Along comes Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, says no way, you can't have a suffolk marry a vaday, because he wants Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov to be Aliba de Hilchotah, that the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar. And therefore now, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov will have the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, who the halacha is like according to Rav. So they'll both say that a safek and a vadai cannot be married. That's the case by a mamzer. So Abaye Amar, Abaye Minar Aminala, to Chosveka de Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, ki vadai mishabile. Let me prove to you that that's really the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that whenever you have a safek mamzer, we make it like a vadai. Titania. Blazim Yaakov Omer. Hareisha ba'al nashim harbeh. Ve'enu yodel izimehem ba. Person who has relations with many different women, and he has no idea what happened or the outcome of those situations. V'chein hi. Shiba'u aleh anashim harbeh. And same thing with a woman who has relations with many men. Ve'enu dad me'izimehem kibla. And she doesn't know which one of them impregnated him. Nitzav noset bitov ach noset achuto. You're going to end up with a huge problem here, because nobody knows who their real father is. Nobody knows who their real mother is. And there's a chance now that erayot, the people who have a relationship of erva, are going to end up getting married, because it turns out that they have common parents, common brother and sister, father and daughter. Nobody knows, because they have no sense of what their yichus is. V'nitmalei kol olam kulo mamzerim. And the whole world is going to be filled with mamzerim. That's what the pasuk says in Ma'ikra, that the world, the land, will be filled of znut and zima, of these inappropriate relations. So you see from this statement of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that even though, of course, it's only a safek here, we don't know for certain that they're mamzerim over here, because there's a chance that since they don't know their father, or they don't know their mother, that they're going to come to get married, or something will happen that will cause mamzerut, but we're not certain about that. Yet, when he makes the statement, he says, Nimsa kol olam kulo mamzerim. He makes this a definitive statement, that the whole world will be full of mamzerim, without any safek to it. That's a vaday mamzer. So you see that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov classifies a safek mamzer like a vaday mamzer. That's the reason, or the way that we learn it out from here. Some suggest that we learn it out from the fact that he winches twice. First, nimtza av noset bito v'ak noset achuto. And then again, in the repetition of nitmalei olam gulo mamzerim. So that repetition is an emphasis on the fact that they're made into vaday mamzerim. Because what did that last phrase add? He already told you might have an av and a bat, or an ach and achot. So what v'nitmalei olam gulo mamzerim must be telling you that he thinks that they are vaday mamzerim. Rava amar lecha. How's Rava going to explain this statement of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? Hachik amar. Zo mahi. Zomahi means, who's this? What's this? It means it's a safek. He's not saying that mamzerim over here are real mamzerim. He's just saying, v'nit malei kolam kolo mamzerim. There's a good chance that we're going to end up with a mamzer over here. It's not saying vaday mamzer. Just saying, we don't know what these people are. So therefore, there's a risk that these people are mamzerim. He's not making a definitive statement that they are mamzerim. He's just saying that there's a possibility that we don't know, and therefore we don't know. There's a chance that we have mamzerim that are floating around over here. Yeter alkein amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. More than that, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov adds over here, lo yisa adam isha bibnina zu, ve'elech v'yisa isha bibnina acheret. A person shouldn't marry a woman in this country, and go to another country and marry another woman. Shema yizdavgu ze leze, v'nimtze nose ach nose tachoto. Because there's a risk that his son here and his daughter there will get together, and then you'll end up with a brother and sister getting married, unbeknownst to them, that they have a common parent between them. Not in the day of modern communications, but here, if they have a wife in one country and a wife in another country, that it's very possible that people would not know that he has two families and have no sense that there is a connection between these two families. Given that possibility, there's a chance that you're going to end up with problems of mamzerut in this situation. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov recommends against doing that, because then you're going to end up with a huge problem over here. So now, Ini, is that really true? Do we really worry about this issue of marrying women in two different countries? Or two different areas, two different regions? Vaha Rav. Ki ikla le Dardashir. Rav, when he used to go visit Dardashir, Machriz Vamar, he used to announce, Man havi yoma. Who's available to be a wife for the day? Rav Nachman, ki ikla le Shichtnaziv. When he used to go to this place, Machriz Vamar, he did the same thing. Man havi yoma. Who's available to be married for the day? So now that's a problem, because now they're going out to these far-flung places, and they're getting married and marrying a woman during that period of time. Where it says, Shani Rabbonon, the Pekia Shemayu. These are famous people. Since they're famous people, if they have a child, be sure that everybody will know that the child is their descendant, and therefore they don't have this problem where people are not going to know that the children are miyuchas to them. The Gemara then says, how does this work? V'hama Rabba, doesn't Rabba say, Tabu Ali Nasei, Benit Paisa, person makes a marriage proposal, and the girl acquiesces to it, Tzrichale Shev Shiv'a Nikiim, she has to wait 7 days after that, because we're worried about Dam Chimud. Dam Chimud is the fact that she is desirous of this marriage. That desire brings to a possibility of her seeing Dam, Dam that would be problematic, like Dam Nida. And because of that, whenever there is a marriage proposal, we wait the 7 days. Now, once they're married, it doesn't matter. And this is only where they weren't aware of the fact that they were going to get married. The proposal was coming. So because of the excitement of the fact that there was a proposal here and acceptance of the proposal, we worry about that dam chimud. So over here, how are these rabbanan announcing, I'm coming, and all of a sudden they're going to get married that day? The women who acquiesce or take up the proposal, that means that they just found out about it today, they're excited about it, why don't we worry about dam chimud? Mar says, rabbanan shluchayu have a mishadre, umodi luhu. They used to have representatives that went ahead and checked, scattered out the women, got the women in place more than 7 days before, so by the time the rabbanan got there, they would be nikiyim. Vivai teima, rabbanan yichudei ba'amahu de miyachdei luhu. That they really weren't going to be with them. They were simply going to be mityachedim with them. They would only be together with them in isolation. We're going to talk about this in a second. Damar mar, eno domer de mishi ish lo papisolo, mishi eno papisolo. There's one person who has a loaf of bread with them versus someone who doesn't have a loaf of bread. Meaning that if you know you have it, then you don't feel so needy. Like on a fast day. On a fast day, you feel hungry and you're dying to eat, da da da. On another day, you'll be busy doing stuff, you'll forget to eat, and you won't even notice that you didn't eat. Because you know you can eat. As long as you know you can eat, you don't worry about not eating. But when you can't eat, then you feel the effects of not eating. So that's the same thing here. A person has a wife in hand, doesn't worry about it, doesn't have the risks of nocturnal emissions and other things that could come about. Versus someone who has a wife there, even though he doesn't necessarily get together with her. So now we have to explain this whole Gemara over here. This Gemara is a very difficult Gemara. It's a Gemara that we saw back on Yoma Daf Yud Chet. The Yoma Daf Yud Chet, that's where this sugya is brought as well, which is Man Da'avi of the Yoma, who is available for the day. Now, what type of situation is this? What type of setup is this that the Rabbanan were doing? And how do we explain what was happening over here? Because the Gemara in the end gives two answers, seemingly. One answer is that they used to send their shlichim ahead of time to tell the women to be ready, and therefore the dam chimud issue wasn't there. Or, they weren't getting married, they were just being mityached. They were just being alone together with these women, and it was pat pesalo. Tosafot here asked the question, all the Rishonim asked the question, what type of pat pesalo is this? First of all, he can't be together with her. So if he can't be together with her, why is that called pat pesalo? Beyond that, how is he allowed to be mityached with her? How is he allowed to have yichud with her? Because we know that a person who gets married, if they get married while the woman is a nida, kochupat nida, whether it works or not, the Rambam doesn't even believe it works. But if you believe it works, then you have to be separated after the chupa. The man and wife cannot be together alone because we're afraid that they will have bia, even though she's a nida. Because over there we can't trust him because it's the first time. It's new. There's a lot of excitement about it. Once the couple is married, then we don't worry about it because they know that it'll be a heter afterwards and it's not the first time. So therefore, couples are trusted when the woman's a nida to separate. But the first time when they first get married, they're not trusted, they have to be separated. So the same thing over here. How could they be mityached with these women if they are nidot because of the dam chimud, how does that help? How does it help from two perspectives? How does it help? They're not allowed to be together with them alone because they're nidot, and this is the first time. And number two is, even if they are together, why does that help? Because they can't have bia with these women. Why is that called pat bisalot? So those are the two questions raised by all the Rishonim. Tosfot over here gives one answer. He says that kevan shipamim lo haya ba'alea lo michmada v'lo chazio. So therefore, he says, since they knew that sometimes the Rabbanim, when they came, did not necessarily have bia with these women, then it wasn't that type of excitement that would result in dam chimud, because it wasn't a definite situation. It wasn't certain that there was going to be some sort of marriage here or intercourse performed over here. And therefore, it was less of an excitement about it. And therefore, we don't suspect dam chimud. And Tosfos says, you have to say that. Otherwise, how could they be mityached with this woman? That's why it was allowed over here. That's Tosfot over here. Tosfot in Yoma makes two other suggestions. One is that the Isra of Yichud with a Nida only applies to someone who's not otherwise married. Meaning that not only is this the first time for this couple, but it's the first time this person's been married. Since it's the first time that he's been married, then we don't trust them to be mityached with a Nida. On the other hand, if this is not his first marriage, then we don't worry about Yichud with a Nida. And so Tosfot suggests that's the answer over here. There's no problem of Yichud with a Nida because these Rabbanim were married. Just this, they took this woman over here. That's one thing that Tosfot and Yoma mentions. The second thing he mentions, and this the Rambam mentions as well, which is, there's something called pat besalo l'achar zman. It's still considered to be pat besalo, even though she's not muteret to him now. She will be muteret to him in the future, and that's enough to be considered pat besalo. Even though right now he can't do anything about it, but the fact that he knows he has a woman here, and in the future he can be together with her, that's enough to placate his urges, and that's why it works over here. So that's the way the Tosafot and Yoma deals with this problem, both of the problem of Yichud and the problem of Pat Bisalot. He says, Eino Konami, she has Dam Chimud over here. Why is he allowed to be mityached with her? Because he's already married, and then it's not a problem. And he and the Rambam suggest that it's called Pat Bisalot because after a matter of time, she will be muteret, and that's still called Pat Bisalot. The Rambam also mentions, based on our Gemara, something that the Raiva takes issue with, but the Rambam mentions over here that a Talmud Chochum is mutar b'yichud nida. That as opposed to all these other scenarios where we don't allow yichud with the nida, the Talmud Chochum has a dispensation, and he bases it on our Gemara here. You see that the Chachamim got together with them b'yichud, even though there was dam chimud, and we didn't worry about it. So that shows you that a Talmud Chochum is mutar b'yichud im hanida. So that's why the Rambam solves the problem of yichud. And again, like the Tosafot, he solves the problem of Pat Bisalot, because it's Pat Bisalot l'achar zman. On the other hand, the Raivod explains this differently. The Raivod there on the Rambam in Hilchot Yitzurei Bira suggests that the Yichud over here is not Yichud like in the classic sense of Yichud, being alone with a woman, but rather Yichud over here means the Yachedota, the Ya'edota, which means that she was designated to be his wife. It wasn't that they literally were together alone, had Yichud, but rather Yichud over here means that they designated this woman. Once they designated this woman to be the wife, that's enough to placate the individual, and since he knows that he has someone who's there, that's enough for him. He doesn't need to really act upon it. That's the way the Raivad explains this Gemara over here of Yichud. Rivash gives a similar answer to the Raivad in his Chuvot. The Ramban suggests over here that Yichud Emiyachtehu is not an extra separate answer from the previous answer, but rather it's a continuation of the previous answer. Previous answer said, well, what about the problem of Dam Michimud? The Gemara answers, don't worry about Dam Michimud. They sent the Rabbanan earlier to warn them or to make the proposals of marriage, and therefore it wasn't a problem. Then the Gemara has to answer the second issue, which is, wait a minute, what about the problem of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says you shouldn't marry women in two different areas because then the children born of that marriage might end up getting together and you'll have a problem with Mamzerut. So the Gemara earlier had answered, well, the names of the Rabbanan get out, that won't be a problem. So here the Gemara gives an alternative answer, which is, Yichud emiyachteduhu. They only had Yichud with them, they did not have Bia with them. Again, the Ramban thinks that the marriage here that went through was a full-fledged marriage, but a marriage that didn't involve Dam Chimud, because they gave the warning 7 days in advance. And the fact that we worry about having wives in two different areas or different places, that we don't worry about because they only miyachte lehu. They only yichud miyachte lehu. They only had yichud with them. They never really had bia with them, and they weren't going to produce a child. So that's how the Ramban solves the problem over here and says that this answer, b'yichudim yachtidu, was not a separate answer, but a continuation of the previous answer that we gave. And then from all this, we learn something, which ends up having implications, l'alocha, in a tshuva from Rav Adi Yosef, which is that, over here you see, it was important to take care of these urges. I mean that these urges are real, and we have to acknowledge them, and it's important to deal with these urges that a person has. And so therefore, we deal with it over here by mihav l'yoma, if a woman is available, depending on the explanation that we gave here, depending on the different rishonim, what exactly was done here in order to solve that problem. But you see the Gemara here, we're dealing with Gedolei Olam, we're dealing with Rav, we're dealing with Rav Nachman, and yet they still had to deal with these issues, and therefore, they took care of it. So Rav Adi Yosef gets a tshuva from Sao Paulo, Brazil, in which an individual got divorced from his wife. They had a secular divorce. He was willing to give a get. He paid out her ketubah. He did everything kedat b'din and halacha, but the woman refuses to show up in Beit Din to receive her get. The Beit Din had called her one time, two times, three times, and she hasn't shown up in Beit Din. She's a misarevet, and they can't get her the get because she won't show up to receive her get. So they write to Rav Avadi Yosef asking if they can permit this individual to remarry now, even though he's not divorced from his first wife. Obviously, we have the problem of the cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom to take more than one wife. And we have, on the other side, the heter Meir Rabbonim that would allow him to get out of it. But they say we can't do that in Brazil. We just don't have Meir Rabbonim. It's too involved. And we can't get him freed from this woman. So Rav Adi Yosef writes back that he thinks it's fine for this man to go get remarried. Says it's the woman's fault, the fact that she won't show up to receive her get. And therefore, this man can go out and get married. Especially since two things. Number one is, he wants to be Mikayim Pru or Vu. He does not have children yet. And therefore, that mitzvah is waiting, begging, and therefore he should definitely get married. And number two is, he says he's a young man, and he's definitely going to have urges, and it's important to deal with it because of our Gemara over here. You see that our Gemara here says, Man Hav L'Yoma. Over there, we're talking about Amoraim of great stature and who are older. Here, it's a young man, and obviously he's not on the level of Rav and Rav Nachman. How can we tell him to just hang out and wait? For sure, we should let him get married, and based on that, Rav Avadi Yosef says, even though our practice today is not when a person is young and he doesn't get married, Shulchan Aruch talks about his times when they used to force people to take wives so that they don't end up in sin. So he says, even though we don't do that anymore, and the Achronim say no, he says, in this case, it seems to me obvious that they should do this and should allow him to get married, and therefore he should get married based partly on this Gemara over here as his proof that we do worry about these issues. Right now we have one more statement in the Gemara from Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, which is, Tana Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov omer lo yisa adam ishto v'dato legersha. Person should not marry a woman when he has intent to divorce her. Now the Gemara in other places talks about, in like Gemara in Gittin and stuff like that, it talks about that a man should not have bia with his wife when he intends to divorce her. So there it makes a lot more sense. They're married already. And he intends to get rid of her and he's just using her in that way. So there the Gemara says that that's inappropriate, completely inappropriate. Over here, he's not even married to her. So he says, he shouldn't marry her for whatever convenience, whatever reason is, but his intent to divorce her. Because it says, Al tacharosh areyacha, do not plot against your friend Ra'ah, evil. And he thinks you're his best friend. He thinks he's all comfortable with you. And he has no idea that you're really behind his back plotting evil for him. So the same thing over here. This woman is in innocence and in simplicity just thinks that she's getting married. Meantime, this guy's just getting married. So he's going to dump her the next day. The Rambam, based on our Gemara over here, says that's only true if you don't inform the woman. Because over here, they were doing exactly that. The Rabban were getting married for a day and then divorcing the women. But the fact that they announced that they're going to do it is enough to mitigate that problem. And therefore, we allow you to do it in a case where the woman is informed, because then there's no plotting behind her back. She's not just like a tamim here, where she thinks she's getting married and you're planning on divorcing her because you've told her all the information up front. So Rambam, based on that, paskins that since the information was disclosed up front, therefore it's okay. If something like that happened, for instance, a number of years ago, where they had a problem where there were two brothers. It was a brother who lived in Eretz Yisrael, a brother who lived in Australia. And the brother who went to Eretz Yisrael passed away and did not have children. So his wife was up for Yibum or Chalitza from the other brother. But the other brother was in Australia. Besides the fact that the other brother was in Australia, In addition to that, obviously he didn't want to perform Yibum, because we don't do Yibum anymore, so it was an issue of getting to do Chalitza. It was a difficult undertaking. So what they ended up doing in that case was that this brother that lived in Australia, in the interim he gets married to the woman's sister, and then it creates a problem of Achot Ishto, and they couldn't get married. Now obviously this was a technical solution to the problem, but it was clear that they did it in order to prevent the problem of Yibum. But over there, he wasn't going to stay married to this woman. He only got married to this woman in order to prevent the problem of Chalitza and to solve this problem. So it's those scenarios where it's done and it's clear both parties knew why they were getting married and both parties knew that it was all done to circumvent the problem of Chalitza. Over there, it's not problematic. Even though he's marrying her in order to divorce her, she knows and she's informed about it. So therefore, he married her sister in order to solve that problem. And again, all of this was rabbinically ordained because they used the technicality in the law to take care of a situation where it would have been impossible to take care of it and where the law is no longer applicable. We don't perform Yibum anymore. We need Chalitza to get rid of it, but they have a problem. One's in Australia, one's in Israel. So marrying a sister, you use the technicality in the law to get rid of the problem. Now, the Gemara is going to go through a number of scenarios here with regards to this child that is a Safek. The child here is a Safek, whether he was born to the first brother that passed, was deceased, or it's a Safek, he was born to the Yivama and the Yabam. So now, what happens here? Safek v'Yabam. Here they come to split the property of the deceased brother, the child, and the brother. They come to divide up the property of the deceased brother. Safek amar ana bar mitnahu. He says, I'm the child of the deceased brother. And that's my property. V'Yabam amar. And the Yabam says, at bevadai didiat, you're definitely my child. You have no rights to that property over there. That's your uncle's property because he's my brother. You're not his son. Have a mamon amutal b'safek. This is mamon that is uncertain how to deal with it. Mamon amutal b'safek chokim. And when there's mamon like this where they have equal claims, therefore it's a safek and we're chulek. Now Tosfot over here says that's the position of sumchos in Baba Kama. Position of sumchos in Baba Kama is when you have a safek, you split it. So Tosfos says, even the Rabbonon that argue on Sumchos over there, who say, Amotzi mechavero alav araya, over here will agree with Sumchos. That's because, Modu hacha delo shayachan Amotzi mechavero alav araya. There is no Motzi mechavero alav araya here, because ain ze mukzak yuter mize. Neither party has a clear claim over here. Both parties are making a claim out of Safek. So since both parties are making out of a Safek, neither party is mukzak in the property to say, oh, the other party should bring a proof. Because neither one has a right to the property any more than the other. They're both speculating. One is speculating that I am the son of the deceased. The other one is speculating, no, you're my son. And I'm the brother of the deceased. And that speculation is what brings them to this. And therefore, it's a mamona mutalba safek and chokim. As opposed to other situations where we have these types of uncertainties in halacha, there are many times, like I will say, show the daino. The dayonim can make the decision. Whatever they see best is the psak halacha. We don't say that over here. Here we say it's mutalba safek chokim. Because over here, it's a different type of safek. It's a safek that has no clarity to it, and where no position has a better claim than anyone else. And therefore, we'll split it. Safek ubnei yabam. What happens to the child who is a safek to the deceased brother, and a safek, a child to the yabam? And the children, the real children of the yabam. So over here, the yabam has other children. Plus, he has this one boy, which we're not certain whether he is his brother's son, or is his son. Shubal lachlok, we can say mitna. And they come to split the property of the deceased brother. Safek amarahu gavra bar mitnahu. The safek says, I am the child of the deceased brother. B'nechsei didiyu. And the nechasim are mine. B'nei yabam amre atachenu. At. You're our brother. Umantahu di lachvadan. You get one portion with amongst us. You're like one of us. You'll split it with us. The other brother's property will fall into our father's property. And then we'll split that all up evenly. Sover Rabbanan Kameh Rav Meshar Shalamei Mar. The Rabbanan in front of Meshar Shalamei thought to say, Matnitanit, this is like a Mishnah, the Tnan. Hu eno Yoresh Otam, Vein Yorshim Oto. They are Yoresh him, but he is not Yoresh them. That's a situation in which an individual is born from a mother who got married before the 3-month window in between the death of her first husband and the second husband, or divorce from her first husband and the second husband. She got married too quickly. So he's a safek whether he was 9 months from the first father or 7 months from the second father or the second husband. So then when he goes to each set of brothers, he goes to the brothers that he has from the first husband, they say to him, you're not our brother. You belong to the other group. He goes to the brothers of the second husband, and they say, you're not a brother, you belong to the first. Each group could push him to the other side, and therefore he is not Yoresh Otam, but they are Yoresh him. The two sets of brothers both have an equal claim on his property, and therefore if he passes away, the brothers from both of them will come and make a claim, and they'll be Yoresh him, they'll split it in half. V'hocha ibcha. Over here, it's just the opposite. Because hotam amrele aiti raya v'shakol. Over there in the case, the brothers from the first husband and the brothers from the second husband will say, bring us a proof that you're our brother and then you can inherit with us. You don't bring us a proof. You have no claim. We're all vadai. You're a safek. Bring us a proof that you belong here. So over here, hacha amar lehu, aiti rayo shkulu. Over here, it's just the opposite. He can say to them, bring a proof and then you can inherit. Because he's your termukzak over here. He, by definition, has a claim in the deceased brother's property. That is because either he's his son, and therefore the property is rightfully his, or if he is a son to the Yabam, then he should get the other property, as a portion of that property belongs to him through the brother that performed the Yibum. So either way, he has a definitive claim on this property. The other brothers only have a safek claim here. The only way they have a claim is if he was born to the Yabam. But if he was born to the original deceased brother, then they have no claim of that property whatsoever. So over here, he is the vadai, and they are the safek. So he'll say to them, bring a proof. Bring a proof and take. You can't compare the cases. Over there, they are vadai children of that brother. And he's a safek. The one who's born to, we're not sure if he's born to the first husband or the second husband, he's clearly a safek. And the brothers who are born definitely to the second or first husband, they are vadai. Over here, even though he has a better claim than the children of the Yabam, nevertheless, he still has a claim of safek. He still does not have a definitive claim where he can say one thing and that's it. Because over here, he's either the son of the deceased brother, and therefore he gets all of it, or he's the son of the Yabam, and he gets a portion of it through the fact that the Yabam performed Yibum over here. So since he has a right to the property, he has a better claim than the other parties. But he definitely does not have a vadai claim. He can't tell you what his claim is. He can tell you that I have two claims, and between the two claims, I have some claim over here. If he's going to compare it to a Mishnah, it's like this Mishnah. The safek ubnei yabam, shabalu lachlok v'nechsei yabam, gufei. In a case where a safek and the children of Yabam come to divide up the property of the Yabam himself, not of the one who passed away, but of the Yabam himself, but there they can say to him, bring us proof that you're the brother, and then you'll collect with our father. So the same thing over here. They'll say, look, bring a proof that you're our brother, and then you can collect with us. But as Rashi points out over here, this is not as simple as that case, because Venira Beinai, Rashi says, I think here, Dai Manto to Kamodu Le Shokyo, that the portion that they agreed to, he gets. There is a portion. They have to make up a decision. They have two possible claims against him here. They can either say, you're the son of the deceased brother and you can't collect with us. Or they can say, you're our brother and we all have to split it. What would that depend on? Depends on how big each estate is. If the estate of the deceased brother is bigger, they're going to say, you're our brother. If the estate of the Yabam is bigger, they're going to say, you are the son of the other one. But whichever one they admit that he's a part of, he should get that portion. He should at least get that portion. They can't push him out entirely. They have to admit that he has one of two claims. So whichever claim works out better for them, they can say you have the other side, you have that claim. The remainder will be a safek, and then they'll split it. So as Rashi points out over here, you can't just say that he's going to get nothing. He will get at least one part of the portion, depending which portion works out to be less. He'll get at least something definitively, and the rest will be safek, and they'll divide up the remainder that is a safek over here. So that's the second case. Now we have the third case over here, which is safek ubnei yabam shibalu achlok v'nechsei yabam. So this is the case that we just mentioned before. You have the safek and the bnei yabam that are coming to divide up the property of the yabam. The butter, the polak yabam v'nechsei mitna. At the point in time where the Yabam already had divided up with the property of the deceased brother. So as opposed to the Mishnah that we quoted, where they're just coming to divide up the property of the Yabam over here, here they're coming up to divide up the property of the Yabam, but it's after they already have an agreement in place. Which is at first, the Safek, this child who he doesn't know if he's the son of the deceased brother or the son of the Yabam, he already had an altercation with either his father or his uncle, and they divided up the property of the deceased brother. So they have already come to an agreement about how it was to be divided. So they divided up the deceased brother's property. Again, in all these cases, I should give an example, make it easier. You have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven passed away, and then Reuven's wife went ahead and had Yibam with Shimon. And then there's a baby born. And we're uncertain as to whether the baby was Reuven's baby or Shimon's baby. That's the safek in all of these cases. The individual, whether he's the son of Reuven, he's the son of Shimon. So in the first case, we discussed a case where the child that is born here and the Abam, Shimon, are arguing about who gets the property of Reuven. The safek says, I'm the son of Reuven, therefore it all belongs to me. Shimon says, you're my son, and therefore you have no entitlement to the property. Property is mine, because I inherit the deceased brother. I inherit my brother's Reuven. Over there we say, it's mamana mutava safek, split it. That's the first case. Second case is safek ubnei Yabam. It's a case where this child that was born, that we are uncertain as whether Reuven or Shimon is his father, and the children, the real children of Shimon, come to divide up the property of the mitna, of the deceased brother Reuven. So there, in that case, again, we said that it was a mamono mutalva safek, because neither has a definitive claim over here. As Rashi pointed that out to us, that child at least has a right to some of the property for sure. Because the children of Shimon can either say, look, you're the son of Reuven, you can't split with us in the property of our father, or they have to say, look, you are a brother, and you get a portion of this property, and we're all going to split Reuven's property. But if they push him off and say, you are a brother, and therefore you're going to split with us equally, they have to at least give him a portion of their property, or they have to give him a portion in the Reuven's property, because one of those two things is true. He's either the son of Reuven or son of Shimon, and either way, they have to give him something. So whichever is the lesser of those two options, they're going to give him. That's Vadai. And then the remainder, they'll split, because it's Mamona Mutal B'Safek. Now we have a third case. It's a case where this child, who we have an uncertainty as whether he's the child of Reuven or Shimon, and the children of Shimon are coming to divide up the property of Shimon. Now, before this happened, this child and Shimon already came to an agreement about the property of Reuven, and they split it evenly. Based on the first case that we gave here, they split it evenly because it was a madamon on mutal b'safek. So now, what happens now? Bring a proof that you're our brother, v'shokul, and then you can take property here. You can't inherit our father. You were Reuven's son. Samalu safek, manav shaychu. Take your pick. If I'm your brother, havuli manto behadaychu. Give me a portion along with you. Ibar mitna ana, havuli pala de pala gavuchan behadai. If you're now claiming that I'm Reuven's full-fledged son and I don't belong here, then give me the half that your father took of Reuven's property. Because that means I was his son, and then your father wasn't entitled to any of that property. So here we have two Amoraim that argue about what the psak is. Rabbi Ava Amarav says, Kamdino. The original solution is in place. Once we gave a psak halach about that, that reality won't change anymore. He can't go back and undo that which was done before. So now we're in a position where he split with the Yabam. This safek child split with Shimon. That's done. That's spilled milk. Now you want to deal with the brothers? The brothers say, bring a raya that you're our brother. So he'll be knocked out of the Yerusha and he can't make such a claim. Rabbi Amar Hadar Dina. Rabbi Amar says, we reopen the whole case. If they're going to make this claim, we go back and say, let's reopen the case and say, okay. And therefore, he has the right to make such a claim. Let us say that Rabbi Ava and Rabbi Yirmi are arguing about a machloket Tanaim that we have in the Gemara in Kedubot. The Tanan, Mishalach Medinat Yam, Abdalu Derech, person who went overseas, he had a property that was landlocked with other people's property around, and he had a path that went to his property. So now, Admon Amar Yelech Biktzarat, he gets to pick a way to get to his property, the shortest distance to his property, and that will become the path again. He can be extorted. Basically, any of the people around him can charge him any amount of money they want to get his path, or otherwise he's got to fly over to his field. You don't have a choice. He has no claim here. Wait a minute. Admon has a good claim over here. Look, he definitely had a path here before. How can you throw him out entirely? So Admon has a good claim. What's the case there in the Mishnah? There are four different neighbors around his property. So therefore, he doesn't have an easy claim here. He can't go to one of them and say, listen, my path was here, because they say, no, it was with the other guy. And the next one will say, it was with the other guy. He has no way to get them all locked down at once. And that's why the Rabbanan have that. Where it says, Yochi, my time with the Admon. Then Admon makes no more sense anymore. The Rabbanan are right. He has no claim over here. So Amar Rabbah explained. Ba'arba'a datu mikoach arba'a. if the original owners, there were four different property owners around him, and now four property owners bought from those four property owners, or there are four landowners now, but they all bought it from one person, everybody agrees there, Admon and the Rabbanon, the Matzah Midachle, they can knock him off. Because when it's four that bought from four, he has no claim that he can say every one of them can push him off of the next one. Also, when you have four property owners that bought it from one, they can see one of them and say, I didn't buy the property that had the place in it, I didn't have the path in it. So in those cases, everybody agrees you can knock him off. When one person bought up all the four property owners around him. Bottom line is you have my path in there. You bought all four of these properties, no matter what. Now you're one defendant, and I can go to you and I say, Mimanov Shach, you have my path. Give me my path back. If you're quiet, then good. I'm going to dump the shtarot back to the original owners, and then you'll have no claim. So the new property owner can say, listen, if you deal with me, this is the way Rashi reads it, either you deal with me and you pay me for a path to get through here, otherwise, what I'm going to do is I'm going to reverse all these sales. And if I reverse all these sales, you'll never get anything. Because then all these property owners are going to bounce you around and you'll never buy anything. At least if you deal with me, pay me, you're going to get a better deal than trying to deal with the other four property owners. So I'm saying, be quiet, take the deal, otherwise I'm going to make your life miserable. So that's the way that Rashi reads it. Tosafot says that what it means, ishatak, shatak, he says, not like Rashi, perish lo titol klum. Either be quiet and don't take anything. It's not like Rashi says, ishatak mazinalach. I mean, he says, keep quiet and I'll give you a good deal, because the haktani, yikach lo b'derech me'amana. Me'amana, I mean, that's a big price. That's not a cheap price. That's overpaying for the derech. So Tosfot says, Rashi says, listen, I'll give you a good deal. Take the deal and be quiet. Otherwise, I'm going to dump all these property back to original owners and you'll get nothing. You have to pay a fortune to get in here. So he says, just take the deal that you have. That's the way Rashi says. Tosfot says, that's not what it says. The Mishnah says, you're going to have to pay me'amana. That's what the Rabbanan say, pay 100 mana. So he says, basically what he's saying is, be quiet and take nothing, otherwise I'm going to dump it back, and then you'll never get anything done. So either you pay me a fortune and get it done, or I'm going to dump the shtarot back, and you're not going to be able to negotiate with anybody, because they're all going to dump you around. So Lema Rabbi Ava Damar Karabonon. Let's say Rabbi Ava holds like the Rabbanan, who say that once the din is in place, I mean, when he started with the four, and then he moves to the one has the same rights as the original four, and therefore he can push them off. Rabbi Amar Kadmon, that says, listen, you came from four, but now you're one. Now that you're one, we have to deal with the situation now. We don't talk about four, we're talking about one. So to over here in our case, where they already had a negotiation between the Yabam and the Safek child, between Shimon and the child that we don't know whose child he is, since they already had a negotiation, do we undo that negotiation or not? So Rabbi Abba says, no, we don't undo that negotiation. Like the Rabbanan say, the four people are gone already. But that power was invested in the one who bought him. And therefore, we continue from that going forward. So too over here, we continue with the fact that they split already, and now you just work forward from there. On the other hand, Rabbi Yirmiyah says, no, we undo the previous negotiation because we look at the whole thing again. That's what Admon says. Admon says over here, this guy is new. He's a one owner. If he's one owner, then forget about the fact they were four before, and now he's one, so he's got to deal with it. So Amar lo chal Rabbi Ava ana Amar yafilu gadmon. Rabbi says, I can even hold like gadmon. Ad kadmon kumar admon hotam el mishum dar malay mimonav shach daki gabech. Over there you can say, mimonav shach dar chachad gabechu. There's definitely a path there. Over here you can't make a statement of definitive statement saying that for sure I am the child of this. He still has a claim that is a safek. I mean, you're right, mimonav shach, he has a claim, but his claim is still an uncertain claim. He says, either I'm the child of Reuven and I get everything, or I'm the child of Shimon and you got to be splitting with me. But that's still a two-pronged claim. It's not a definitive claim. He has a vadai claim, misafek, which is that one of those two claims is definitely vadai, but we don't know which one of them is. Over here, he has a vadai claim, which is that I have a path here, and that's a definitive claim. Rabbi says, I can even fit into the Rabbonon. Because over there you have this claim where he says, either you keep quiet, otherwise I'm going to give back all the sale documents, and then you're going to be dealing with those four. And then you won't be able to deal with them because they'll all push you up. Over here, the Bnei Yabam, the children of Shimon, can't say to him, listen, either you keep quiet or we're going to reverse the original transaction. They can't say that. They're not in control of the original transaction. That's not going to work over here. Number one, they're not in control. Number two, it's to their detriment to reverse the original transaction because then he's going to get all the property of the deceased brother of Reuven. So therefore, they don't have that type of claim or power in their claim because they can't make any threat over here. So that's how we said that this machloket amoraim is not necessarily connected to a machloket tanaim, because each one of them can claim they can fit into the tana no matter what their position is. So we had three cases today. We're going to get to a number more cases tomorrow. Three cases today. The first case is a case where it's the child who have the safek about, and the Yabam, Shimon, are arguing about whether who owns the property of Reuven. Over there we say it's Mamona Muntaba Safek. There it's definitely a 50-50 shot, and they split it. That's how that works. The second case was a case where you have the Safek, the child with uncertainty, Ubnei Yabam and the children of Shimon, fighting over Reuven's property. They're fighting over Reuven's property. The Gemara there at first thought that maybe over there the Safek child has the better claim, and therefore you can say to the others, Motzi Michavero Alav Araya. In the end, Rav Misharshi says that's not the case because he doesn't have a definitive claim. Again, even though he has, Bade has a claim, it's a safek which one of those is his claim. And because of that, it's Mamona Mutal B'Safek, and they're going to split it again. Rashi over there noted for us that they're not going to split it entirely because of that fact that he has a definitive claim in one way. So they're going to have to give him at least a portion of it to say for sure he has that claim, and then they're going to split the remainder. The third case that we spoke about today is where the Safek Umbnei Yabam, this child was a Safek, and the children of Shimon are coming to split this property of Shimon now. But that's already a Mishnah. But they dealt with the case where they already had a previous negotiation where Shimon and the Safek child already split the property based on our first case over here. They already split the property. Now Shimon dies and he comes to make a claim. I'm one of your brothers. I want the property. So over there we said that that's a machloket as to whether we reopen the original case. Because he basically has a claim. He says, listen, if you tell me I'm not your brother, then I should have gotten all of my Reuven's property and not, your father shouldn't have got a half of it. So take your choice. Which one is it? Am I your brother and we're going to split and you're going to give me a portion here? Or I'm not your brother, and then if that's the case, I should get all the property of Reuven. So Rabbi Abba says, too bad. Once Sakalocha is done for the first case, it's over. We can't go back to that. That's a done deal. Those are the facts now. Those are the facts, and we work forward from those facts, and therefore he has no claim, and he can say, Mozim Echavero Olav Araya, and he won't get a portion here with the brothers. On the other hand, Rabbi Yirmiyah says, you have to look at the whole case. You have to open up the whole case over here, because it doesn't make sense to give one psak, and then give the opposite psak in the next case. Take your choice. It's either a Mozim Echavero Olav Araya, then he gets all the property of Reuven, or is your brother, and he's going to share with you, and you guys are all going to share in Reuven and Shimon's property. Take your choice. You can't say that, oh, they split it originally because there's a fake. And now you want to make a claim that there's another safek and he has to bring a raya? Mimon of Shach, he has to have something that's right over here. And therefore we reopen the original negotiation in order to deal with the case over here. So it's a machloket there between Rabbi Avraham and Yirmiyah, whether the original negotiation becomes now facts on the ground that cannot be unwound, and therefore we deal forward, or we reopen the case to deal with the whole situation. And that's how we left off, and then we'll bring additional cases tomorrow. We ended 7 lines down on the top of Lamed Chet Amud Aleph.